Chapter 7 Mutual Benefit.
Drizzy Daddy,
Bree said happily, bouncing along in front of Drizzt on Andahar's broad back as they rode the trail southwest out of Citadel Adbar. In a couple of hours, moving through the magical gates from Gauntlegrim, where they had said farewell to Catti Bree, to the common portal shared by the three dwarven kingdoms of the Silver Marches, and then to Citadel Adbar. The father and daughter had covered nearly 800 miles, but they had 1,000 more to go now and without the help of magic. Except, of course, for the magic of Andahar, the wonderful unicorn companion summoned from Drizzt's whistle, who could run tirelessly throughout the day. Even with the unicorn's long strides, Drizzt figured it would take them a month to get to the Galena Mountains and the Monastery of the Yellow Rose. Alone, he could do it in a 10-day, but with Bree along, the breaks would come often, perhaps quite often, and the day's rides would surely be much shorter. He could have chosen a magical journey, of course. He could have ridden a portal to Longsaddle, and had Penelope arrange for a teleportation to Grandmaster Kane's front door. But he wanted to undertake this journey, just him and his Bree, to see the wide world and enjoy the vistas and the many peoples and cultures they would find along the way. Still, it was not without a sizable amount of trepidation that Drizzt had ridden out of Citadel Adbar's gates that afternoon. The world was not always a welcoming place. The lands they would cross were not without monsters of all shapes and sizes. He could take care of himself as well as anyone he knew. But could he take care of Bree? He said Andahar at an easy but determined canter through the forest. And the land rolled up and down about them, one tree-covered ridge after another, the shadows protecting them from the summer sun, the sun-speckled ground before them giving Bree endless entertainment. In the early afternoon, on the fourth day out of Adbar, they came to a wide stream and pulled up for a rest. As always, Drizzt didn't dismiss Andahar, wanting the steed about in case of the need for a fast retreat. He watched Bree splashing in a small side pool while he filled his water skins. He marveled at the simple joy in her eyes. He wanted to keep that joy of life itself there forever. More than anything, he wanted his daughter to grow up strong and clever and full of confidence, and full even more with happiness. He never wanted her to lose her delight at the simplest things, the sun-dappled earth, the splash of water over stones, the sounds of the forest about her, the shapes of the clouds. "What's my name?" he called to her.
"Drizzy Daddy," she enthusiastically called back.
"What's my name?" he repeated in his scary voice, coming toward her, his arms up and rocking like the arms of a rearing bear.
"Drizzy Daddy,"
Bree cried out and laughed and splashed away with a squeal.
"Drizzy Daddy," she repeated again and again during the chase, finally ending in a laughing squeak when Drizzt caught her and scooped her up into his arms, turning her horizontal and bringing her up high.
He put his lips against her exposed belly and blew hard, and Bree laughed riotously at the tickle and the sound.
"Drizzy Daddy farted," she declared after Drizzt put her back down.
"I hate your belly," he corrected.
"No," she insisted, and stuck out her tongue and blew a raspberry of her own.
Drizzt chuckled, but felt a pang within that honest laughter. This was the childhood he had never experienced, the carefree creation of giggles that too few got to enjoy. He wished he had played this game with Zachnephane, though he couldn't even imagine the possibility of any such playfulness with his mother, Malice. Such a waste of life itself, he thought, given what he knew now. What Kimoriel had helped the priestess Evanel and matron mother Quenthel Beanri reveal of the hopeful beginnings of Menzo Baranzon, before it had descended into its current joyless reality, before the Way of Lolf, where the tension and excitement of chaos swirled away the pleasures of simplicity and love. They ate a meal beside the flowing stream, watching the dance of sunlight on the rushing water, making up silly songs about Brunner and Zachnephane and mostly Catti Bree. Drizzt trusted his wife and her skill, but he couldn't help the fears within that perhaps she would never return, that Bree would grow up without that beautiful influence in her life. This was the first time in many years that Catti Bree had set out on such a dangerous mission without him,
though danger had always been a part of their lives. Now, though, with Bree, were they bound to change that? Should he have talked Caddy Bree out of going? Would she have tried to talk him out of it had their opportunities been reversed? Because he would have wanted to go, he knew. And that realization made him dismiss his doubts and fears as his own selfishness. He thought, too, of the time this wonderful partner had gone alone into the Underdark, all the way to Menzo Baranzon and House Baenri itself, to rescue him. "Mumuma?" Bree asked, as if reading his mind, the silly name she used for her mother. He looked down at her with surprise, and realized that, no, it wasn't that. Bree was looking across the stream, where the branches of a tree still rustled from something or someone moving through them. Drizzt calmly and slowly slid his hand out to his bow. He gave a little wince, thinking that perhaps he should not have given Tolmeril back to Caddy Bree for her adventure, that maybe he'd be better off now if he had with him the readily accessible bow that could shoot small bolts of lightning. He wished, too, that he could bring Guinevere to his side now, to leap off across the stream and find out what had moved through that bush. The sound stopped. It was likely a squirrel, he told himself. He thought back to the first time he had seen Bree, to the feelings of vulnerability that had filled him like never before. To lose her. Drizzt shook that dark thought away, but also shook away their happy moments here by the stream. He gathered up his items and his daughter and set them in place on Andahar, then walked the unicorn across the water. Up he went and off they went, slowly at first, but gathering speed. Then more, as Drizzt noticed some scorched grass not far in, wisps of smoke still rising from it, and the faint scent of foulness, demonic foulness in the air. The trail was less defined here, the trees more tightly packed, and Drizzt had to pay attention to the way directly ahead, while still glancing to the sides, watching for pursuit. Through the trees to the left, he saw the form of a rider, galloping hard, clad in black on a black mount that snorted demon flames. Then it was gone, behind a hillock. But he heard more hoofbeats over on the left, and then on the right. Doubts whispered about him. He brought his arm tighter about Bree and urged Andahar ahead, thinking of Tolmeril, thinking of Guinevere, thinking of the unthinkable. "Forgive me," he whispered to the breeze, as if hoping that it would somehow send the message all the way to Caddy Bree, wherever she might be.
"That can't be the way," Artemis Entreri insisted, his teeth beginning to chatter.
"North face," Caddy Bree replied. And she shuddered as a gust of wind swept down from above, carrying snow dust and a bite as ferocious as an icewind dale winter night. But it was not night, and it was not winter. The sun hung pale and meager before them, more to the left and much lower toward the horizon than it had been when they had left Luskin, but the sun nevertheless. "Too cold," she added, looking to Jarlaxle, who was bent over. A moment later, he casually stepped up onto the deep snow, barely leaving a footprint, seeming unbothered by the wind. Only then did Caddy Bree notice that the rogue had changed his shoes and was no longer wearing his signature high black boots, but instead a pair of mid-calf boots, furred and thick, and very out of place with the rest of his sleek outfit, the same clothes he would wear on a Kalimport street in the heat of the desert summer. Caddy Bree didn't have to cast a spell to determine whether those boots were magical, and it was pretty easy for her to guess the enchantment upon them. "I didn't expect it would be this cold. Have you a spell to counter it?" Jarlaxle asked her. Caddy Bree nodded. "It is not a minor Dwyamer, and I don't know if it will last long enough to get us off the mountain. You have our heavier cloaks in your magical pouch." She motioned for him to retrieve the winter clothing.
"Cast your spell anyway," Entreri bade her.
"We'll be fine," Jarlaxle assured them, and he drew their eyes to Zacnafane, who was crouching low, much as Jarlaxle had done, half buried in the snow. Apparently noticing their glances, Zac looked up, then tugged his shoulders back, and Caddy Bree understood him to be pulling on a similar pair of boots before he even stepped up atop the snowpack, confirming her suspicion. It's like sitting in the mouth of a white dragon, Zack remarked, as he pulled a pack off his back, fumbling with the drawstrings.
Soon enough, likely, Entreri replied, his teeth violently chattering now.
Zacnaphane pulled out a thick blanket and tossed it to him, then another to Caddy Bree. He kept fishing about as the two wrapped themselves in the coverings. Caddy Bree cast a protection spell upon herself, then upon Entreri, who immediately took a deep breath and shuddered just one more time before steadying. "We've an hour to get down to shelter before the Dwyamra expires," she warned the others. Jarlaxle held up his hand and stared at Zack, who finally pulled his head and hand out of his large backpack and brought forth a small coffer. He bit the glove off his hand before gingerly opening the container, then walked lightly across the snow and produced a ring for his daughter-in-law and another for Entreri. "Put them on and let the magic find its way to you," Jarlaxle explained. "They should provide the protection you'll need."
"Ready for anything," Caddy Bree dryly noted.
"I saw the snow on the other side of Gromp's gate," Jarlaxle replied with a shrug.
"Then why didn't you give us the damned rings before we left?" Entreri complained.
"I knew it would be cold, but I didn't think it would be this cold," Jarlaxle admitted. "But yes, always prepared. I did acquire some magical assistance from the more industrious wizards of the Host Tower in preparation. The same trinkets they use for journeys to Icewind Dale, I expect."
"Better your boots, then," Caddy Bree remarked, pointing her finger to note that while Jarlaxle and Zacnaphane were standing atop the deep and powdery snow, she and Entreri most certainly were not.
"Why didn't you just give us the damned rings back in Luskan?" Entreri asked again.
"You need to attune to them."
"Which could have been done in Luskan."
"Yes, but I do not own them, you see," Jarlaxle replied. "They are on loan from Cecilia."
"The Cloud Giant?" Caddy Bree asked.
"Yes, and she is very particular about her magical toys. She'll know every attunement when I return them to her."
"And so you'll have to pay more," said Entreri, shaking his head.
"Another spell, then?" Jarlaxle asked, changing the subject. "A floating disc, so that you two can drift down the mountainside, perhaps one for each of us. A levitation spell and a pair of ropes, so that Zack and I can fly you two like children's kites as we skip our way down."
"Or maybe I just make you carry me on your back," Entreri groused. "Or beat you senseless and swap your boots for this ring. Or maybe keep both for myself."
Jarlaxle clapped his bare hands together. "You see, Zacnaphane, my old friend, this is what I so dearly missed of the road, the camaraderie." Artemis Entreri grunted, or perhaps it was a growl. "You two embrace the protective magic of the bands, while Zack and I scout about," Jarlaxle said.
"That can't be the way," Entreri said, bringing them back to the original topic.
"Gromp said that we'd land on the face of the northernmost mountains," Caddy Bree answered him, waving her arm out of the land spreading wide below them, down the mountainside and through small, rocky foothills, before flattening out in a vast white plain.
"But we left in late morning, and the sun is low to our left, and if north is before us, then left is west."
Caddy Bree took his point with a curious, and noted the perplexed look on Jarlaxle's face, though Zacnaphane seemed not to fully comprehend the point.
"And it's too low in any case," Entreri went on. "Does that much time pass when traveling through a magical portal? I've never seen such..."
"No, we just stepped through," Jarlaxle assured him.
"The sun was higher in the Luskan sky than that," Entreri insisted, and none could argue. "But lower in the sky than it would have been in Kalimport," he went on, thinking it through and holding up a finger, tapping it in the air as he pondered. "The sun was always higher in Kalimport than in Luskan, and even more so than in Icewind Dale."
"Then the days are shorter in Icewind Dale than in Kalimport?" Jarlaxle asked more than stated.
"In the winter, not in the summer," Entreri replied. "Not by much, at least."
"But we're still in summer, so you said," Zack put in. The others exchanged glances.
"How far north did we go?" Entreri asked.
"Gromp didn't say," Jarlaxle replied.
"Is there a limit on how far he might have thrown us?"
Jarlaxle shrugged. "With that one, probably the outer reaches of the astral plane."
"Are we still on Toril?" an agitated Entreri asked.
Gromps said we would be, said Jarlaxle. But even if the days are shorter here, and they shouldn't be in summer, Caddy Bree put in, stammering for an answer as more questions popped into her head. It's not yet even noon, at least, not in Luskin. So why is the sun so low in the west?
Are we on top of the world? Entreri asked.
Or over the top and on the other side? Jarlaxle asked.
Wouldn't left, looking north, still be west? Entreri asked.
But then it would be night, Caddy Bree hesitantly remarked.
The Underdark is a much simpler place, Zack dryly put in.
Aye, because if we stood about bantering this long, we'd already be dead, Jarlaxle replied. I don't understand it, Caddy Bree said, staring out to the left. Her eyes widened as she noted that the sun had moved, but not so much in its proximity to the horizon as farther to the right.
But wouldn't that be the east? She whispered, more to herself than to the others.
Zacnaphane, Jarlaxle said deliberately. The milky white orb, please. Zack fished in his pack again and produced a small bag, then rolled a perfect orb, like a giant dull pearl, into his hand and tossed it to Jarlaxle. Jarlaxle closed his eyes and held it out and up before him, and the ball began to slowly rotate in the palm of his open hand.
Interesting, Jarlaxle said a moment later, staring at the orb. Yes, we are on Toril. We haven't stepped through the planes of existence, for I was assured by Cecilia that the orb wouldn't work anywhere but in our own plane and world. He pointed down the snowy slope and a bit to the right. It appears to be working, and that way is north.
The giant has told you that? Caddy Bree asked.
And loaned me the item.
Loaned?
Is she charging you gold for each usage? Entreri quipped.
Quite a hefty price, Jarlaxle replied. I suppose that when you're flying castles about the world, direction is important.
Dumwheel wouldn't have known the way, if this is anywhere near where Gromph dropped her, Entreri said.
It was just a guess by Gromph when he recreated the portal, Jarlaxle admitted.
Wonderful.
She wouldn't have known that. But would it have mattered? Caddy Bree said.
All she would have known was that she needed to find shelter and warmth. She looked back over her shoulder, the mountain towering above them, and that only one in a great range of jagged high peaks.
And she would have had no more choice in where to go than we do, because we aren't getting over these mountains unless we find a proper pass.
We have a choice, Entreri reminded them, and looked at Caddy Bree.
Where is your sense of adventure, old man? Jarlaxle quipped. We know she's alive.
And likely half a world away, Entreri interrupted.
But Jarlaxle just scoffed and continued. Let us find some proper shelter, and we can begin our search using the sword. If Dumwheel is near to us, I guess that Cazadeo will sense it.
So Caddy Bree will sense it, Entreri reasoned.
I feel like one of Jarlaxle's toys, the woman remarked. We'd have to get rid of Drizzt first, Jarlaxle quipped.
Zacnaphane punched him in the shoulder, or tried to, but missed and lost his balance as the snow collapsed a bit beneath his lead foot, sending him down to one knee.
Displacer cloak, Jarlaxle explained. But good try, my friend.
Always prepared, Entreri muttered, echoing the thoughts of both Caddy Bree and Zacnaphane, and drawing an even wider grin from the irascible Jarlaxle.
He had tied Bree to him with a cord, and now held a bow in hand, arrow knocked. Drizzt quietly urged Andahar on even faster, trusting the unicorn to navigate the woods while he cast his gaze all about, looking for enemies. He could hear them now, the running hooves left and right, and caught occasional glimpses through the thick summer canopy, but nothing more than black-clad riders on black mounts. He thought them hell steeds, nightmares, the demon horses used by the cavalry of the lower plains. Drizzt knew them well from the magical figurines that both Jarlaxle and Entreri used. And just like Andahar, these mounts flanking him wouldn't tire, and they were just as fast. He could only hope they were carrying minor fiends, and that he could encounter them a few at a time, that he might dispatch them before they got near to Bree. And. He lifted his bow,
seeing movement behind some brush not far to the left, but then jerked and nearly dislodged the arrow as Andahar came over a sudden ridge, slowing as it moved down the steep decline. The unicorn deftly jumped a group of large stones at the small ravine's nadir, only to struggle in the soft and sandy ground on the climb out the other side.
"Easy, my friend. Take care of your child," Driz heard in his mind, and he thought he recognized the intruder, even before he looked up to see a trio of drow, two astride nightmares, at the top of the climb before him. Driz lowered his bow and tugged Andahar's mane to stop the unicorn. The center drow pulled back the cowl of his hood, revealing himself as Braylon Jankay, and motioned for Driz to come up. Knowing Braylon well, Driz did so, pacing Andahar easily up the hill while untying poor Bree, who was crying from the shaking of the gallop. By the time he reached Braylon, he had Bree up on one shoulder and was whispering into her ear.
"You could have announced yourselves earlier," Driz scolded the Brigandier scout. "I don't appreciate being shadowed for miles through a forest."
"We are but forward scouts and were instructed not to approach you," Braylon apologized.
"What are these?" Driz asked, waving his free hand to indicate the hell steeds that Braylon and one of the others sat astride. "Has Luskin begun trading with the Nine Hells?"
"A few of the more clever wizards at the Host Tower have spent great effort in creating obsidian steed figurines," Braylon explained. "And Jarl Axel has spent quite a fortune in trading for them with Waterdeep's noble families. He is determined to make of Brigandier the cavalry force, I am sure."
Somehow, Drizzt wasn't surprised.
"Where is he?"
"Jarl Axel?"
"No, the one who brought you out here."
"The one who was just in my mind," he thought, but didn't say.
Braylon looked back over his shoulder toward a thick stand of trees, and a few moments later, Kimoriel came out of the shadows, riding yet another magical mount, this one translucent, save for flashes and sparkles of light that gave it equine form, more resembling a constellation in a night sky than anything solid. The psionicist waved away the drow flanking Braylon, and likely sent them telepathic instructions before pacing a celestial mount up before Drizzt. Recovered from the shock of it all, Drizzt felt his relief turn to trepidation, for something had to be amiss here, surely.
"No, nothing like that," Kimoriel answered his thoughts.
"Stop it," Drizzt warned, and the psionicist bowed respectfully. "What are you doing here?"
"Archmage Gronf told us of your intended journey. I tried to catch up to you in Gontalgrim, but you were already gone."
"So you followed me through the portals to Adbar?"
"It was worth the trouble just to see the looks on the faces of the dwarves of Adbar," Braylon put in.
"In Mithril Hall, too, though they were more willing to accept our presence since King Brunner was with us for that part of the journey."
"You still haven't answered my question."
"Because I have much I'd like to discuss with you," Kimoriel explained.
"And with Grandmaster Kane, if you would be willing to offer me an introduction."
"You couldn't have just had Gromp teleport you to the monastery and met me there?"
Kimoriel shrugged.
"Jarl Axel," Drizzt reasoned.
"He told you I was coming out here with Bree and bade you to escort me."
"These are dangerous lands."
"I've ridden them before."
"With a child?"
Drizzt didn't answer.
"If we caught you, why couldn't others?"
"To be fair, you hadn't exactly caught me. You found me, but I'm not so easily caught. Besides, I don't know many other bands of highwaymen riding around on magical hellsteeds."
Kimoriel smiled widely, and that seemed to Drizzt the most disconcerting thing of all.
"Nor will you now. I have a score of drow with me, including wizards and priests.
If I had wanted an escort, I would have asked King Brunner, or Regis perhaps, with his band of halfling friends, the Grinning Ponies."
"Should we be insulted?" Braylon Jankay said lightheartedly.
"You won't even see us then," Kimoriel promised.
"Nor any enemies that might come against you. We'll dispatch them beyond your child's vision and hearing. Except for me, I hope. I would like to ride with you for a while at least, that we can converse and I can, perhaps, convince you that I am worthy of an audience with the great Grandmaster Kane.
I'll introduce you without reservation."
"I'm humbled by your trust."
"What trust?" Drizzt said. "If you threaten Kane, he will finish you before you know that he has sensed the threat."
"As you will," Kimoriel replied. "Are my terms acceptable?"
"As you will," Drizzt replied. Gamoriel dismissed Braylon then, and Driz led the way. Bree was calm again, and Andahar wouldn't tire, so there was no need to pause. For a long while, Gamoriel said nothing, just paced his celestial steed easily beside the unicorn, and true to the Psionicist's promise, Driz noted no sign of the escorting drow brigade. Not a whisper of noise or a shuffle of leaves. He wasn't surprised. Confident that Caddy Brian and Treri had attuned themselves to the rings, the group began to move, though it became immediately apparent that this would be no easy task. The snow was deep and unpacked, and while Jarlaxle and Zack could effortlessly walk atop it, both because they were elves and because of the boots they wore, the two humans could not. "Maybe you could swap boots for rings," and Treri grumbled after only a few plowing steps. "You skinny elves won't sink in as far, even without them." "That would mean another long delay," Jarlaxle said, "for such items have to be acclimated to a new host." "Of course," and Treri grumbled back. "And then you'd have to pay Cecilia more for the second attunement on the rings." "You see," Jarlaxle returned, "I will teach you yet what it is to be a proper merchant." "I have the spells to protect us all while we wait for that," Caddy Bree put in. She looked from the man to Jarlaxle, who was nodding solemnly. Too much so, she thought. She knew that he almost certainly had scrolls that could be read to protect them all from the cold, or other wondrous items that could move them easily down the hill. But Jarlaxle never showed his hand, and never used up his magical items when he didn't have to. One trudging step at a time, Caddy Bree pressed on, thousands of feet of snow-blanketed mountain before them. And Treri came past her suddenly, driving hard and spitting curses. When he finally ran out of momentum, he stopped very abruptly. At least, his lower half did. He lurched forward at the waist, getting a face full of snow. Jarlaxle tried to ask if he was all right, but all Caddy Bree heard through the howling wind was a snicker. But then something else, something lower pitched, something beneath her. And Treri straightened and didn't even bother to wipe the snow from his head and shoulders, just grumbled and started forward. "Wait," Caddy Bree bade him, quietly but insistently. And Treri kept going as if not hearing her. "Wait," she said louder and with urgency. "Hold, all of you." "What do you know?" Jarlaxle asked. Caddy Bree shook her head and held up her hand to keep them quiet. She was no stranger to this type of terrain, having grown up in the frozen wastes of Icewind Dale. That barely perceptible rumble below her foreboded great danger, she realized, and she could only hope that it was just a warning and not the beginning of the inevitable catastrophe. "Well?" Treri demanded quite loudly. "Shh," she insisted, quietly. "The snowpack is loose, the top levels at least." "Top levels?" asked Zacnafane, who had no experience with anything like this environment. "The snow grows deeper with every storm, and what was there before melts under the sun. Hardens to ice, and thus grows more slippery," she explained. "This deep snowpack is not stable layer to layer, and if we cause too much tumult, the entire side of this mountain covering will break free and slide down." "Avalanche," Treri said. "Are you sure?"
"I feel it," Caddy Bree said.
"Wonderful. What do you suggest?" Jarlaxle asked.
"Going home," said Treri.
"I don't think we can get down like this," Caddy Bree replied, "especially where it gets steeper just ahead."
"Then we move laterally, perhaps, and find a different route?"
"Every step could bring half the mountain down on top of us."
"Give them our boots and we can levitate much of the way," Zack offered, a suggestion that didn't seem to sit well with Jarlaxle.
"Wait," Caddy Bree said.
"Please don't recall us to Luskin," Jarlaxle begged. "I have gone to such trouble. This is too important."
Caddy Bree looked at him curiously, for his sudden intensity seemed too great for the stated mission. She heard Drizzt's words in her head again. "Do you believe that this is the full story of why Jarlaxle would go to such lengths?" And couldn't deny her agreement. But no, she wasn't planning to send them home, not yet. She had a different idea. She wasn't sure it would work, but thought herself quite clever as she began spellcasting. Moments later, a wide ball of flame appeared in the snow immediately before her.
It seemed to sink in rivulets of water shed from its base, weaving paths downward but freezing again almost immediately when they got past the heat of the moving flaming sphere. Caddy Bree wheeled her creation forward straight down the mountainside. A semicircular depression appeared in its wake, almost as wide as Caddy Bree was tall, and glistening more spectacularly than the shining snow. Caddy Bree pressed forward to the upper lip of the newly formed ice chute and bent over it, pulling herself up. She took an arrow from her quiver and jabbed it against the ice as she sat up, then used it to control the speed of her sliding descent. As she went, she kept the ball of flame moving far before her. "Wait here," she told the others. A minute later, the flame winked out, but Caddy Bree cast another one right at that spot and sent this one, too, straight down the mountainside. She was hundreds of feet below her friends now and held up her hand to beg for a bit more patience. A third ball of flame replaced the second, then a fourth, and by the time its magic expired, the icy slide extended over 1,000 feet from where they had begun. Caddy Bree paused there and surveyed the mountain, looking for a path. One seemed promising off to her left and down to a ridge of black rock protruding from the snow. It was also risky, for she couldn't see beyond that jutting stone, and she had the energy to cast only one more ball of flame for the day. She heard Zacnaphane shout out to her from far above. She just held her hand up in response and continued to consider the rocky ridge. She was still pondering the possibility when she felt another, more insistent rumble beneath her. One that didn't stop, like a vibration deep inside, a yawn and a growl from a waking mountain beast. Caddy Bree cast her spell and sent the ball rolling away for the stone ridge. She looked back and waved to her friends frantically and saw that they needed no prompt from her. For above them, the avalanche had begun, a great wave of snow sliding down the empty mountainside. And Treri dove onto the slide, Jarlaxle right behind, and Zacnaphane right behind him. Caddy Bree tossed her arrow break aside and sped away down the last run, angling straight for the jutting stone ridge. It would have been exhilarating if not for the terror driving her. She dismissed her ball of flame short of it, and a good thing that was, for she plowed headlong and hard, but into the remaining snow and not the stone. She pulled herself out and scrambled to the ridge, then to the top. She heard Entreri's approach and turned to see him, the other two sliding fast close behind, and the avalanche wall of snow gathering speed and nearly overtaking them. Caddy Bree peeked over. A substantial drop loomed, but at least the bottom showed snow and not rock, though she knew not how deep. The ground began to shake wildly. She didn't have a choice, and so she rolled over the crest and fell. She landed hard, twisted, and everything went dark. And the ground about her shook with the violence of a wounded dragon.